Hello, welcome to the PGS third quarter conference call. My name is Hank Hamilton. I'm the CEO of PGS, and joining me today on the call are Arna Helland, our CFO, Robert Hobbs, our Chief Operating Officer, and Karen Ellswell, who is our Vice President of Business Development. Earlier today, we posted our third quarter earnings, along with a recorded presentation of those results. We trust that you've had the opportunity to view those before now, and we'll now just give you a brief summary of the main points of the earnings release before opening the call to your questions. In the third quarter, TGS achieved a new record for net revenues with $170.8 million. That's an increase of 70% compared to the same quarter a year ago. We experienced very strong growth in late sales in both Europe and in the Gulf of Mexico. And in addition, we earned $37.4 million in proprietary contract revenues, which is approximately double the previous year. And this is primarily as a result of some good 3D seismic contracts in Europe. Our operating profit was $75.8 million, representing 44% of our net revenues and up 67% compared to the third quarter a year ago. Our multi-client amortization rate was 35%, and that's in the middle of our expected range. Our Q3 figures do contain three unusual non-operational items that have a large impact on the recorded earnings. But we'll go through those briefly now. First of all, as a result of our shareholder vote to terminate the merger with Wadefield in September, we expensed $3.2 million of merger costs that had previously been held in our balance sheet for the application to the purchase accounting. Without this particular unusual item, our operating profit margin is 46% as opposed to the 44%. The second item is that we recorded an unrealized but non-tax deductible loss of $55.6 million on the 10.1% of the Wadefield shares that we own. The third item is that we recorded an unrealized impairment charge of $8.4 million in order to reduce the value of some short-term investments we have called auction rate securities down to the liquidation value in the secondary market for these securities. A much more thorough discussion of this is included in our earnings release, so I'll refer you to that. Not including these three non-operational items, our fully diluted earnings per share were 50 cents. That's up 100% compared to Q3 a year ago. But including these items, our fully diluted earnings per share were negative 14 cents. During the quarter, we continued to actively grow our data library. We had investments of $80.6 million, and that's up 160% compared to Q3 last year. Pre-funding during the quarter covered 45% of those investments. Our cash flow from operations after taxes, but before investments, was $61.2 million compared to $78.7 million a year ago. At the end of the quarter, our backlog was $190 million. That's a new record for us. It's up 20% from our previous record at the end of the previous quarter, and it's up 59% over the same quarter 1 year ago. We have not experienced a reduction in activity from our customers so far, but we do believe that the current credit crunch and the economic slowdown that we're experiencing around the world will have an impact on our future growth. I think it's important to note that over the past few weeks, we've received numerous offers for 2D and 3D seismic vessels with availability in late 2008, 2009, and beyond. And it's clear now that the rates for these vessels have peaked and are on the way down. The availability of vessels seems to be significantly better than it was just a couple of months ago. The flexible business model and the very strong balance sheet of TGS have allowed us to profitably gain market share in previous cycles. We will be cautious but opportunistic in evaluating new investments in the current environment. For the first 9 months of 2008, our net revenues are 44% above the previous year. So we're well ahead of our own expectations and well ahead of our own plans so far this year. In all previous years in our history, the fourth quarter has been our highest revenue quarter. And that's due to the tendency of our customers to make large purchases from our library towards year end. We should point out that the magnitude and the timing of these late sale purchases can be very volatile and very, very difficult to predict. At this point, we're adjusting our expectations slightly for the full year of 2008 as follows. We expect our multi-client library investments to now to be between $275 and $300 million for the year. Our previous range had been between $250 and $275 million. We'll invest slightly more than we had planned. That's primarily a result of a decision to charter an additional 3D vessel in Q4 this year, as well as some impact from the hurricanes that we had in the Gulf of Mexico during Q3. Our average pre-funding will be in the range of 45 to 55% of our multi-client investments. We're at 46% year-to-date so far. We expect that to climb up a little bit in Q4, but our previous guidance had been 50 to 60%. Our average annualized multi-client amortization rate, we continue to expect to be in the same range that we originally guided, which was 32 to 37% of net revenues. And we're raising slightly our expectation for our total net revenues this year to be in the range of $560 to $590 million. That's up from our previous estimate of $550 to $580. And finally, we still expect our proprietary contract revenues to make up between 10 and 15% of our total revenues for the year. That's unchanged. So at this point, we'll open up the call for your questions. Please press the star key followed by one to queue up for your question.
First question, Paul Dahl, First Securities. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. Congratulations with a good quarter. Just given the world we're seeing today with the pricing of reserves and production assets on the stock exchange being down 40-50% and the price of oil services being unchanged, and with your experience, what do you think oil companies will do? Will we see another M&A wave going forward? And how will that impact you and what you see on E&P spending going forward?
Right. We would expect that given the current valuations, that the most attractive way to add reserves is through M&A. So I would expect there to be increased M&A activity. That's not particularly good for our business. We'd rather see people exploring, but on the other hand, the M&A creates opportunities for us as well. With respect to E&P budgets, I think it's too early to tell at this point. We've talked to a lot of companies, and a lot of them, I think, are reworking those budgets right now. We've heard some companies say they're going to be up 10 to 15%. We've heard many companies say they expect to be flat, and we've heard some companies say they expect to be down 10 to 15%. So it's a mixed bag right now, and it's really too early to make a prediction on that.
Okay, great. Thank. Good luck with the future.
Next, Morten Lysen, Fearnley Funds. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Hank, first, congratulations with the whole organization with a very, very strong third quarter, especially late sales, very strong. Just a comment on your vessel commitment for 2009. I see on page 30 in your presentation that the Geobaron is an option. First of all, is this right, and are you able to walk away from a potential charter? And when do you need to decide up on where you want to get?
Okay, well, I'll let Robert Haas answer that question.
That's correct. On the Gia Barrett, the current firm charter that we have for that vessel is ending in the beginning of 2009. We have two 6-month option periods with that charter, and we're evaluating now whether to take that first option and have some time before we have to make that decision.
Okay, can you give us any range in terms of when you need to decide that?
More than I don't recall right now what that termination date is, when we have to notify them.
Okay. And also on the presentation on page 33, when you have included the backlog, which is very impressive, could you please provide us with the split between seismic and well-log?
Off the top of my head, I don't know that number exactly, but off the top of my head, I would estimate that about between 25 and 35% of that is related to our geological products division.
Okay, thank you. And a final question, if I may. I noticed that Marathon Oil was out today saying that E&P spending, that they will cut the E&P spending with 15%. Could you give us any indication how you think the E&P industry are thinking about the geophysical spending? Or should we expect the same decline as the overall E&P spending for the E&P industry?
It's a good question. I think we don't have a good handle on that. In past cycles, we have seen seismic spending probably cut more than other types of spending. Whether that will be the case in this environment or not, we're not sure. I think there will be some pricing impact, not only on the seismic spending, but also on other E&P types. I think you'll see pricing begin to come down in many sectors in the E&P world.
And a final question, if I may. Hank, what should we think about multi-client spending for 2009? Should we expect it to be flat for a company, or should we expect it to decline?
Now, are you talking about our own spending in terms
of your multi-client investment?
Right. Well, we have quite a bit of flexibility. I think in our presentation we've shown what vessels that we have commitments for next year, and that is, that's a smaller list than what we've used this year. But we have the flexibility to cut back as much as maybe 20 or 25% if we so choose, or we also, based on the availability we're getting for new vessels or for other vessels, we could actually raise. So, It depends on the opportunities that we see, the pre-funding that we see, and the quality of the investments that we think are out there. I think a range of anything from minus 20% to plus 20% is possible.
Thank you.
Next to Anders Lunde, DNB Markets. Go ahead, please.
Hi, and congratulations with the strong results. We have seen estimates for E&P spending coming down quite significantly the last couple of months, and most likely seismic rates down according to that. But if we say that the E&P spending and also the day rate that you have to pay to the vessel owners would fall by, say, 10 to 15% in 2009 compared to what we thought a couple of months ago, will that make you increase your multi-client investments in 2009 based on availability or decrease your spending based on less revenue expectations?
I think it depends on our perceived demand for the actual individual projects that we would propose. It's certainly attractive in theory to collect a much higher volume of data for the same investment. And we have traditionally done well in those cycles, but we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. That's why we said we'll be a little bit cautious.
So, for instance, for fleet, in order to then start kind of a major fleet survey, say in the U.S. Gulf or in North Sea for that case, what kind of pre-funding level do you need to be comfortable with an investment?
Right. We evaluate pre-funding on a case-by-case basis, and it's heavily dependent on the geographic market that we're in. We've traditionally been comfortable in the Gulf of Mexico with lower pre-funding rates because of our long experience and track record there and the high number of customers we have. So we have started new projects with, let's say, as low as 30%. refunding there. We will probably be a little more, maybe a little more cautious than that going forward, or we may not, depending on the signals that we get. In other markets, we typically demand a higher pre-funding as a hurdle to start a new project. So on average, you know, 50% is a pretty good number for us. And I should also point out that we measure pre-funding somewhat differently than our peers do. To us, pre-funding is what is secured when you're making the decision to start the project. It doesn't include commitments that come in after you've started the project and before you've finished. So if we were to measure our own pre-funding by that metric, it would be much, much higher.
Thanks. Just a final question on your White Estimates program with Western Gecko. Have you seen any change there at all in terms of interest from the oil companies? Or do you think that market will and has developed just as any other multi-client region?
This is Robert. We continue to see interest in that project and in that region of the Gulf of Mexico. I don't know if you've noticed, but BP earlier this month came out with a significant announcement of a discovery in the central portion of our Freedom White Azimuth survey. And that, you know, I have to say, we've since that announcement, we've received considerable number of calls for quotes on that project. You know, interest seems to continue to be steady on it, as it has been from the start. So, you know, it's I wouldn't describe it as you know, unusual from anything really, you know, any of our other projects really that we've done in the Gulf of Mexico in this particular region. And I'd say there may be even some renewed interest in it since we've had some exploration success in the area.
Okay, thank you.
If further questions, key star 1. I will be star 1. Next, Paul Dahl for Securitas. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, just a couple of follow-up questions to understand the drivers of your business even better. Could you tell us something about your sales? Which proportion is driven by demand for oil and which is driven by demand for natural gas? That's perhaps most relevant for US Gulf of Mexico. And also the split between your clients, which are NOCs and super majors, and who are independents. And finally, what is the split, if you may, on what is driven by exploration and what is driven by production spending?
Right. We're highly leveraged to the exploration side. So I would say over at least three quarters of our of purchases are related to exploration or at least exploitation as opposed to production. In terms of oil versus gas, you know, the Gulf of Mexico is kind of a 50-50 environment. It might be more important to note that that the deep water seems to be more resilient to short-term swings in investment than the shelf because of the longer term of the leases and the longer times to development. So people generally take a longer-term view on their activities in deep water, whether it is oil or gas. Doesn't seem to matter too much. The other question related to the split between majors and independents and maybe small independents, I think. We have seen, I think, over the past 5 years, a very steady increase in the activity of the majors in particular in our business. I don't know exactly what the proportion of spending that we get from the majors, but it's I know that it's much higher than it was 5 years ago, probably approaching 50% of our business. And then the rest is a mix. We have very small customers and large independents as well.
Okay, great. Thanks for good answers.
Next, Jawahar Hingurani, Standard & Poor's. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. Excuse me. Thanks for taking my question and congratulations on great results. Real quick, most of my questions have been answered. I just want to get a little bit more clarity on the items affecting the financial items actually going forward. Can you just kind of clarify that one more time, please? So what can we expect next quarter? I know the Wavefield shares are lower since September 30th, but also on the ARS, if we could just get some clarity. Thanks.
Right. So the two issues are the Wavefield shares and the auction rate security. That, we'll let Arne Hellen, our CFO, answer that.
Okay, Jay. What we've done now on September here is to state the Wavefield shares at the value that they were then. Now they've depreciated since then. We cannot predict the price that the Wavefield shares will have at year end, but that will be the price on the stock exchange on the last trading day that will then decide on or determine the value that we will have, hence a loss or a profit within the quarter. When it comes to the auction rate securities, we have valued these shares, securities with a fair value that would be the amount of cash that we would receive should we sell these securities in the market now. Now, we don't need to sell these securities now, since we have enough cash to cover our investments for next year, to repay our bond loan and other liabilities that we have and that we see. But we may want to use this reserve as time comes along, and that's why we value them at the price in the secondary market. Now, every quarter when we go forward, the value of these ARSs will be set at the mark-to-market value.
Got it. Thank you.
Next, Cindy Ju, Jefferies. Go ahead, please.
Thanks. I just had a few follow-up questions. First, on the low-end hurdle rate that you talked about for new surveys in the Gulf of Mexico, you mentioned 30%. Given your experience, how is that 30% relative to the other industry players?
Well, again, I think we measure it quite differently because we take a snapshot at the time that we're starting the survey. And most of the other players continue to count commitments that they receive once the survey starts as pre-funding. You know, if we were to use that metric, we very often have a survey more than 100% covered by the time we finish it in the Gulf of Mexico. So we're talking about apples and oranges, I think.
Right, and I guess I wanted to bring it more into the apples to apples where, you know, how does your 30% based off of what you've seen in past cycles on spec shoots, you know, when they start the shoot, do they get at least 30% as well, or is it much lower than that?
Hard for us to know because they don't release it, but I'd be surprised if during normal market times they would be significantly different from us. There have been some periods where some of our peers have taken the strategic decision to cut back multi-client investments, and during those times they set the hurdle rate very, very high.
Okay. And then with, you know, sort of more supply or and vessel rates coming down right now, are you hearing anything about more speculative shooting going on or possibly, you know, ramping up of some spec shoots?
Well, I think we will probably take a very critical look at every new investment. And pre-funding will be one of the things we look at, but ROI over a 4 or 5 year period will be a more important criteria. So we do think that that cash is the right thing to be focused on in this market, and so we'll be cautious. But at the same time, if we come across good opportunities with very favorable vessel pricing, we'll take them.
And what is the hurdle return on investment for a survey, an average survey?
Traditionally, we earn about, looking at our amortization rate, which has been in the low 30s for the past several years, that reflects that we typically, over a 4 to 5 year period, return about three times the original cost on these investments. And that's not necessarily our hurdle rate, that's our history. We're happy with something, a little lower than that, depending on the risk.
Okay. And then, there's been great success with wide azimuth surveys in the Gulf of Mexico. My concern now with the uncertainty in the market, do you think the rate that it gets transferred over outside the Gulf of Mexico is the same now as it was maybe 6 months ago?
To date, there have still been, to my knowledge, very little wide azimuth surveying done outside of the Gulf of Mexico. We know that there's been a fairly large project tendered in West Africa that's expected to be done next year. It is a high price point, the wide azimuth, but so is $150 million well in deep water. So oil companies will continue to use that process to de-risk those wells if they believe that it will solve the problem technically. And I think there are certain basins around the world where we will see some of that.
Do you think the tenders will come as planned or will get pushed back until there's more visibility on where crude prices settle out?
Well, I think we need to wait and see what sort of budget numbers we're hearing out of the E&P sector over the next few months before answering that one.
All right. Thank you.
Next, Terry Harkness, SEB and Kindle. Go ahead, please.
Hi. If you look on your slight cautiousness for Q4 in terms of revenues, is that based on what you have observed so far in the quarter or based on what you expect for the last few months of the quarter?
Well, as we've showed on a couple of occasions, our late sales revenues are very back-end loaded in almost every quarter. We've not seen a slowdown in activity so far, so things are on track. But we know that we always depend on a strong end of quarter, and that's why we're cautious, because we're not sure exactly how oil companies are going to behave in this environment.
And when you say that in terms of activity, is that based on the ongoing tenders you have and requests and quotes?
It's based on, sales out of our library so far. It's based on quotes for purchase for the remainder of the quarter.
And I have a question related to the securities. What is the reason why you now decide to exit those instruments?
We haven't taken a firm decision to exit those instruments. In fact, we haven't really realized any loss. We're taking a very conservative approach to valuing those in case we decide we want to exit those. At the moment, we don't need the cash and probably wouldn't accept the discount rates that are being offered in the market today. But we decided to take a very conservative approach on the valuation.
Can you say something about the duration of that portfolio?
Yeah. Taya, this is the question of not of solidity, but of liquidity as such. And most of these securities have no maturity at all. So, or they have a maturity that some of them that's 20 years out. And that's why the accounting rules say that we need to have to state the fair value that is below the face value because of the liquidity issue plays in. And so you have the choice between either doing a discounted cash flow model on valuing or estimating the fair value, or you can take the price in on the street should you want to liquidate these shares or these securities. And what we've done is, as Hank says, to take a cautious approach and then actually value them at the cash value that we can receive in the market now.
If I could add, the issuers of these securities have been redeeming them over the course of this year. The rate of that slowed a little bit in the third quarter, but it hasn't completely stopped, so we would expect that we would continue to see some redemptions of these securities at par value going forward.
And final question on the availability of 3D vessels. You said that the availability now is significantly better than it was only a few months ago. Can you indicate how much the price has changed over the past couple of months?
It's significant. We're talking, somebody mentioned maybe a 10 to 15% correction in rates, but some of the rates we're getting have changed more than that in the last few months. So the availability is certainly changing.
Okay, thank you.
Next to Anders Lundell, DNB Nordic Markets. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. I just have one more question related to your guidance. Given you have 410 in net revenue so far, and I expect 560 to 590, which would mean 150 to 180 in the fourth quarter. On the other hand, you said that you are well above your kind of internal expectations for so far this year. Is this 150 to 180 for the fourth quarter, is that more or less than you assumed earlier?
Well, we hate giving quarterly guidance. We don't do it as a matter of practice. It just so happens that we feel the need to update our annual targets based on where we are today. I think, you know, we're being a little cautious because we are so back-end loaded every quarter. And with what we hear about the availability of credit and oil prices and the economic slowdown, we're just not sure exactly what to expect. So we're being, I believe, a little cautious.
So does that mean that that the third quarter then was significantly better than expected, and that you, as many other players, are more cautious about your expectations for the fourth quarter?
I would say
that previously,
our first 9 months of this year has been significantly better than our expectations, and we are taking a cautious view towards Q4 because it's just a period of uncertainty in the world economy.
Okay, thank you.
Next, Morten Lysten, Fearnley Funds. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I have just a question regarding the pre-spending, which you are lowering in this quarter. Is it a result of clients backing out of some of your already committed projects, or why has your budget changed your pre-spending rate compared to last quarter?
No, we haven't had anyone back out of any commitments. When we guide a year in advance on pre-funding, we're counting on pre-funding that we haven't secured yet. And I think one of the issues that affected us in the third quarter were the two hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico, which had the impact of raising the cost on a couple of our ongoing projects. And you can't go back and charge more pre-funding when that happens, so it lowers your ratio slightly. We do expect that to climb back up again a little bit in the fourth quarter.
Okay. Thank you.
Next, Jon Olaisen, Carnegie. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thanks a lot, and congratulations with the fourth out of five strong quarters. Or four out of five last quarters have been very strong, rather, I'll avoid that. But a question to the last downturn. Is it right that in the last downturn, both the client spending slowed down more for high-end seismic, which was high-end or high-density 3D, more than the mid-end and the low-end seismic with 2D and more 100-meter, 150-meter density 3D in the previous downturn?
Previous downturn, I'm not sure we had that much differentiation between high-end 3D and regular 3D. It was kind of one flavor at that point in terms of terms of multi-client.
Yeah, because it looks like 2D actually had a quite strong growth in 1999 compared to 3D, which was down 30% for the industry, isn't it? Or am I completely wrong?
We found 2D last time to be more resilient because of the price point. You know, you can cover very large areas with it. And
yeah.
Also at that time, there were new areas around the world that were opening up for the first time and people needed to look.
Mm.
So maybe there's more to it than just a downturn.
What do you think will happen this time around if multi-client spending is slowing down? Will they go back to more cheaper traditional seismic and stay a little bit away from high-end seismic when it comes to multi-client data?
That's a very difficult question, and it depends on the projects in a particular customer's portfolio. There are some projects for which, you know, cheap seismic doesn't solve the problem. But on the other hand, there are areas where, for exploration purposes, subspace 2D is a good start. So normally they get more cautious with the money in times like this, and multi-client becomes a very good option compared to proprietary contract seismic, because they get bang for the buck. And 2D is, you know, you cover more area than 3D, but it may or may not solve the particular problem you're trying to.
Yeah, and I guess 2D and 3D, is the distinction between those two is one thing, but I'm probably more concerned about the late sales potential for the whole industry's big investment in Y estimate data in the Gulf of Mexico, which is 4 to 5 times as expensive. Any reason to be concerned about the late sales potential for those kind of data compared to the more conventional 2D and 3D?
I don't think so, John, and the reason I don't think so is that the cost of the wells in those areas is so extreme compared to the cost of the seismic that it just doesn't make sense to drill those wells without looking at the best stuff available.
Hmm. And in the last downturn, could you remind us a little bit of what happened to multi-client pricing, or price per square kilometer on a comparable basis? How much were they down?
They only went down in areas where there was direct competition over the same blocks. And so that's where you will continue to see the most intense price competition in a weak market.
Mm.
But we should, as an industry, try to avoid that.
Yeah. There's quite a lot of overlap in the Gulf of Mexico, isn't it?
There is.
And then the final question is to the 3D investments you're doing now in Q4 and over the winter, because you've got two 3D vessels available. And they, if I understand it correctly, they're both operating in Liberia and in Q4, and I guess being a new area with fewer players and higher risk for oil companies, late sales potential should be much lower in Liberia. Could you give any indication of what kind of pre-funding you're having before you're starting a big multi-client 3D project in Liberia?
Well, as Hank described earlier this morning, you know, we look at, you know, we're in an area like the Gulf of Mexico, we might set our pre-funding rates lower than in frontier areas where you may not have as many players. So, you know, I can say in the Liberia projects, those, you know, we don't like to talk about specific numbers for specific projects in terms of pre-funding, but I can just tell you that those projects are very heavily funded. And our, you know, we look, you know, that's a particular frontier area where the blocks are larger. You're naturally not going to have as many players underneath or take part in a particular survey, so we set our hurdle rates significantly higher.
Hmm. And when will that survey be finalized, sorry?
The phase one portion of that survey, the 3,000 kilometers we started in Q3, we should wrap that up in December. And then the second phase, which is approximately 6,000 square kilometers, we should be starting that survey in mid to late November.
All right. And the timeline, when? Sorry.
Second phase will go on through the first quarter of 2009.
All right. And what's the plan for those two 3D vessels for the rest of 2009?
We're looking at opportunities right now. I mean, the vessel that's currently down there, the BGP Pioneer, will go back to BGP for their own work after this Liberia project. and is due to return to us in the third quarter of 2009. Mm. For a 9-month period, or a 6-month period, I should say. The Geo Barents, which is due to start the second phase of that project, we're looking for opportunities for it for the remaining part of 2009. We have some good projects that are in the hopper for that that are materializing right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Next, Jawar Hingawani, Standard & Poor's. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. Something that has come up before with other companies in the industry. Looking at your order backlog and how has it fared in terms of cancellations or delays or anything like that? Can you just kind of characterize that for you, because your business model is slightly different from others in the industry, you know, maybe the last downturn versus now?
Right.
How do you see that going forward?
So the majority of those... That backlog is pre-commitments to new multi-client projects or commitments that to projects that are in progress. Those contracts are firm. They don't have cancellation clauses. In the last downturn, I can't recall that we had anyone who tried to escape from a pre-commitment clause. There have been times when customers have said, boy, I've committed to this project and I'd really rather move that commitment to another project, and we don't like that very much, but from time to time we have accommodated requests like that in certain cases.
So in essence, you know, what you have, you don't lose.
That's correct.
If it gets moved, you know, that's whatever that's worth in terms of, you know, newer business. But
right, and that's pretty rare, actually, that last case.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Next, Morten Liesten, Fernie Fonds. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you. Final question for me. We have now seen that the oil price slid significantly from the curve from the peak in July, and this has definitely affected your and other CEOs' confidence about the outlook for the industry. If you assume that the oil will trade in a range of, let's say, $60 to $75 for the next 12 months, would you then expect your fiscal spending to drop among the majors? Could you say anything regarding that?
Sure. I think the majors have the luxury of taking a very long-term view. And I think some of them will choose to be opportunistic in that environment as well. I mean, it allows them, lower oil prices allow them access to areas that they can't get at today. So for them, it's an opportunity. And I think you'll see some of them being aggressive in that environment. As opposed to the small companies who are more leveraged and work off cash flow.
Okay, thank you.
No further questions.
Okay, we thank you very much for calling in today and joining the call. We look forward to speaking to you again at the end of next quarter.